The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, joined by JJ Cooper, bringing you playoff podcasts as we do every year. First one of this postseason, JJ.
Sorry, we missed one, but we were really busy yesterday.
Yeah, deadline, rookie of the year issues coming out, player of the year issues coming out. Keep an eye out for it on newsstands. JJ, we saw the Yankees and the A's go at it last night, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, the A's strategy with bullpenning. This was a team that did not do it for much of the year. Toward the end, they started to mess with it, had really mixed success, more losses than wins with bullpenning during the regular season. They go out and do it last night. Just what were your overall thoughts on that strategy, that approach? We saw Liam Hendricks give up the two-run home run to Aaron Judge. And in your estimation, was it a mistake?
No. I think they had no other choice. They really do not have at this point. What we have seen, it's amazing to me how quickly the game has changed. If you have Luis Severino, who, by the way, in essence, pitched in a role that did not exist a few years ago himself. He's their number one. You could really argue he's their ace. And he didn't get through five, and it was a great outing. But if you do not have, if you're the Astros and you have Justin Verlander, you absolutely ride Justin Verlander. But if you look at the choices to me that the A's had, is it really going to be, are you going to be that much more effective if you said, you know, if they had sent Mike Fiers out there or
Edwin Jackson, Trevor Cahill,
you know, were you expecting four out of them? Five? I don't think that you would have handed off, if Edwin Jackson starts that game, I don't think you're handing it off to the rest of the bullpen in the sixth inning in any better shape than the 2-0 deficit that they were trailing at the time.
So here's my thing is, while I actually, this is where you and I both disagree and agree, I didn't love the strategy. I thought you had guys that been successful for you all year using a traditional setup. This was a team that was not familiar with it and hadn't had success with it. But that's not why they lost the game. They lost the game because they didn't get a hit until the fifth inning.
But when you say that, though, and you say they're not used to it.
They did it less than 10 times this year, only toward the end of the season. And I believe
towards the end of the season,
I believe they were 3-6 doing it.
Wins and losses, no, that's not really the whole story, because again, you could have a game where you lost. We know this from Jacob DeGrom. They started Jacob DeGrom. Clearly, you don't need to start Jacob DeGrom. You lose games when you start Jacob DeGrom. When you say effective, like they use this, when you say they only use this 10 times, they essentially turn to this as a regular part of their strategy when they ran out of starting pitchers.
Because what they started doing at the end was they were starting Trevor Cahill traditionally, and then the final weekend of the season they said, you know what, let's try doing this the bullpenning way. Mike Fiers had been starting for them traditionally. They only really tried it with those two guys here this final weekend of the season in Anaheim. It was new for a lot of them, and that for me is something where, you know, despite we talk about Cahill and Fiers and Jackson and maybe their shortcomings, they were really, really, really good as traditional starters for the A's this season. And even if they do get you those four or five innings, I would argue that is better than giving Liam Hendricks an inning. It also means, hey, we're not using Fernando Rodney in the fifth when the game can get away with us. We either don't have to use him because you can just go, okay, the guys that are semi-reliable. Rodney's been terrible all of September. You can instead go, okay, we're going to get through four or five with Jackson or Cahill or whoever you want. Then you can go and say, hey, let's go with the strength of Trevino. Let's go with the strength of Trinan.
But reality is,
fewer of your worst relievers are going to get time.
But they were not as good a team as the Yankees. And the problem with that is that even if we say that, they could have done that. And the reality of it is the game went out of hand. Because, and I know that they brought Trinan in a tough situation.
Rodney is when it got out of hand.
But they brought Trinan in. But Blake Trinan, who is very arguably the best reliever in baseball this year.
I think inarguably, yeah, that's point. Sub-1 ERA.
Was not very good. And again, I don't think that that's, I know that it's easy to say, well, he wasn't being put in a save situation in the ninth inning. You know, no.
Yeah, I'm not.
That Blake Trinan has had plenty of options, plenty of times where he's pitched in situations like that before. He's just facing a very good team, and they were very good.
And that's where it kind of comes down to me. On the one hand, you know, you think the A's did the right strategy. I think they didn't. But at the same time, they were the worst team playing on the road against a lineup when healthy that's very dangerous, particularly in their home park. And on top of all of it, like I go back to, even, you know, the A's did not lose this game because of the bullpenning strategy. They lost it because, like I said, they didn't have a hit until the fifth inning. They left the bases loaded in the fourth when Severino walked. When Severino walked those guys.
Yeah, walk and then a bad play by Andujar.
And that, which we've seen a lot of this year.
Yeah.
And then they open up the fifth inning with back-to-back singles. They knock Severino out of the game and get nothing out of it. At both of those points, it's only 2-0. If you miss your opportunities at the plate, especially against the Yankees early, it doesn't matter who you have on the mound. You're not going to win that ball game.
But I will go back to when we talk about the opener, the bullpenning, whatever. The Yankees, who had Luis Severino, I know he was not as good in the second half, but he checks off the boxes as this is a playoff starter. This is not a surprising decision to be a guy to start a winner-takes-all game in the playoffs. And even that, because of the strength of their bullpen, the Yankees almost went to a bullpenning strategy themselves. They didn't even ask him to get 15 outs. And it was smart that they didn't, because once Dellin Betances came in, he made basically one mistake. He didn't get paid, you know, didn't have to pay for it with Jed Lowrie. Everything else was outstanding. And once that happened, it was very hard to see how the A's were going to win, because they were facing a bullpen, which is the world we live in now. The number of fastballs in that game, sub 95, I don't even know if there were any. I mean, it was crazy, you know, but the reality of it is that when you have days off, when you have a situation where there, in October, you have very little worry about absolutely wearing out your bullpen. When it comes to that, and again, Liam Hendricks for an inning versus Mike Fiers or Edwin Jackson, I will grant you, like, if they had wanted to say with that they were going to go to Mike Fiers, but they would really in their mind said, you know what, if Mike Fiers gets us 9 outs, that's all we're going for, sure, I have no problem with that. At the same time, what their real strategy was is they wanted... Really, what I don't know why they didn't do is, again, along those lines, is why wouldn't if Trevino, because of him needing extra time to get ready, needed to come in so early, and you had this hope of getting, because they got, essentially.
So Trevino pitched great.
Yeah, Trevino pitched great, and you got multiple innings out of him.
Right.
I don't know why he wasn't the guy that they started it off with.
And it becomes a situation where, again, it becomes about when you go to the strategy, who you then have to go toward in the middle innings when games can get away. And that's what we saw with Rodney. We've seen it times when teams, the Dodgers last year in the postseason, by pulling Rich Hill as early as they did when he was cruising, really set themselves up for failure in game two by having to go to their worst pitchers, going to pitchers earlier. By the time they were in a sticky situation, they were out of reliable arms. But I do think that, look, at the end of the day, the Barrett team won. And we have seen, we saw, you know, some of the other games, for example, you know, the wild card game with the Brewers, the one game play with the Brewers, Jolys Chacín giving them 5 2/3 of one hit baseball. Perfect. Kyle Freeland pitching the Rockies into the seventh. Perfect.
Right, but again,
if you can get that, that is still the optimal thing to do.
We also very easily could be talking this morning about that they started Mike Fiers and that the first two innings he gave up 4 runs.
Absolutely.
Which again, by the way, it's not a great matchup for Mike Fiers.
Well, that's why I'm not quoting Fiers. I'm saying it should have been Cahill or Jackson.
But, okay, it's not a great matchup for either of them either. But what I'm saying is we could have very easily, the reality of it is that that is a very difficult lineup.
Agreed.
To get 27 outs against.
Agreed.
And credit to the A's. 97 wins this year with, when we talk about their rotation, once Sean Manaea went down, again, if you put us in a time capsule and brought us back 2015, 2016, Kyle and JJ, and you said, by the way, we're debating whether Edwin Jackson should be starting a winner-takes-all wild-card game.
Or even Trevor Cahill.
Or Trevor Cahill, we'd be like, they're doomed.
Yeah. And no, absolutely.
Credit to them that that's not been the case. But you, at the same time, you do say, they smoke and mirrored in some ways. Great lineup, great defense, great bullpen. But it is impressive that they got this far. At the same time, and I know that there are many people listening to this are going to say, no, we are absolutely sick of Red Sox Yankees.
We haven't had it since 2004.
I am excited about Red Sox Yankees. And also, yes, I know that they have, you know, you can throw out 1,000 criticisms if you want. That crowd last night is everything you want in a playoff crowd. They were into it from the first pitch. They didn't need there to be a dramatic situation because, let's be honest, the Yankees pitching was doing well enough that there were very few situations of drama in that game.
Absolutely.
They got out to the early lead. There was the little situation that Severino got into. But other than that, basically, it was something where the A's, they did not have the tying run at the plate very often in that game, much less the go-ahead run. And the crowd did not care. It's a playoff game. They were going to go crazy, and that was an awesome atmosphere.
Agreed.
We saw an awesome atmosphere. This will be our segue to go into talking about today's NL games because we saw an awesome atmosphere in Wrigley as well in an awesome game. And that leaves us, I mean, again, we love October. I do say I get to this point every year and I dread the sleep deprivation. I do. I mean, it's got to be rougher for you because you were on the West Coast where this is no problem. On the East Coast, it is something where it's like...
This is my third postseason. I'm getting used to it. I'm just staying up. But I have to say, it's worth it. October's my
favorite month. I do dread it, though, because it's like I still have to get up at 6:45 in the morning.
So you have kids and you have to get up. I don't have kids yet, so I can sleep in a little bit, take care of the dog. It's great.
It is something where... If it's a 10-0 game, on the night game, I'm going to take off a couple of innings early or something. Last night, I stuck with it because it's like, you know what? The game got out of hand. I'm glad I saw Stanton's homer because that was majestic.
Yes.
That was also the camera angle when they shot it. You're like, wait, that was fair? And then you watched the
replay. No, I agree. My first thought was, huh? But, you know, there's no question.
It's like, wow, was that hooking so far that it, you know, whatever, but it worked out. But so along those lines, though, so what do you think? I mean, today... We really dive into it.
Yeah, so we have the NLDS, both series starting today. You have the Braves and the Dodgers. You also have the Rockies and the Brewers. And I want to start with the Rockies and Brewers. The Rockies, I mean, it's pretty crazy. They, you know, have their season-ending game Sunday, fly to Los Angeles for the one-game playoff, lose, fly to Wrigley for the one-game tiebreaker, and come out with a crazy, crazy extra-inning win. And I think one of the things, you know, it's something that's hard to quantify. Something that's very, very, you know, hard for, you know, people will, I don't know, have criticisms of it, the more stat-inclined people. But the Rockies, to me, this year have just shown this really, really incredible kind of survivability. Like, that's the best way I can put it. This was a team that was 38-41 as June's coming, you know, to an end. And they get red hot, go 13-3 to close out the second half, put themselves right back. They were 7 games out. And in fourth place in the NL West on June 29th. Go 13-3, get themselves back into it with a huge rally before the All-Star break. Stay with it. They go to Dodger Stadium for a critical series end of September, get swept, and all of a sudden, that's going to be it for them. They're done. They're out of it. What do? They come back and respond, not only by winning 8 straight, but by winning 8 straight mostly in routes to get themselves back into it. Oh, they've got this one-game wild card. They lose it. The one-game tiebreaker. They lose in Dodger Stadium. They come back and they go to Wrigley and win. I mean, this is a team that has just again and again and again. It's been the moment of I think they're finally done, and they keep coming back to life. And I think you have a great pitching staff. You have a team that is, you know, Matt and I talked about it. They win. They've won more games on the road than any Rockies team in history because they're built around that great pitching staff, mm-hmm. as opposed to having to beat everyone 12-11. This is a
starting pitching staff.
Starting pitching staff.
I was going to say, like, just to clarify, because, like, I mean, I think their bullpen, when I look at their bullpen, I do not think of it as this is a matchup of a great starting staff versus a great bullpen.
But here's what's interesting about that, because you're right. Over the course of the season, the bullpen was problematic. But
yes, they had early in the season. Problematic.
Very problematic.
Was not, it was like, here, let me take some lighter fluid and, you know, let's see.
But we do talk about teams kind of peaking at the right time, and I tweeted this out during the wildcard game. Wade Davis, for the past 7 weeks, has been Blake Treinen-esque.
He's been Wade Davis. I was going to say, he's been Wade Davis, because Blake Treinen was not Wade Davis.
What Blake Treinen was doing this year, the insane
Wade
not
Davis
giving
has been
up
doing that
runs.
For a half a decade now. So.
Yes, but, I mean, so I think it's one of the things you're right. The bullpen has been issues, but we saw them really come out and hold court during that wild card game against the Cubs. You know, Ottavino's got good stuff when he's on. Sung Wan Oh, final boss, still has something in there. We've talked about Wade Davis being good. I mean, there are arms in here.
But I bring that up because we just talked about the A's versus the Yankees, and I see no team, if the Brewers are going to succeed, if they're going to win this series, they have a starting pitching staff to me that is very similar to the A's. And what I mean by that is if you had said to anyone 2 months ago, who's going to start game one of the NLDS for the Brewers, and your answer had been Brandon Woodruff? I mean, was that... But they,
yes, that is very...
That's not something that you saw coming. But really, when you say they do not have a lot of guys as far as the rotation, I do not know if we will see a Brewers starter pitch in the sixth inning in this series, potentially.
So one of the things, and I actually wrote about this on opening day, that coming into the season, a lot of people talk, oh, the Brewers didn't go get Jake Arrieta. They didn't add the starter they needed. But if you look at the Brewers starters, there are a lot of guys that people don't know the names of, but they've actually been okay. The Brewers this year, their starters ERA was 11th in baseball, better than the Yankees, better than
they have depth.
They were in the top, close to the top third in baseball in starters ERA. So the names are not great.
But when you say that, though, who's their number two starter? When you say that, Wade Miley has, had a great half a season for them. But when you say, when you line this up for the postseason, when we're talking about the Braves Dodger series, and you're talking about, okay, so the Dodgers are going to throw you, Kershaw, Buehler.
With Hill if they want.
With Hill if they want. And the Braves are going to throw Fulton Awitz. And then after that, clearly, Gossman's been great since they got him. Anibal Sanchez has been the surprise guy. But then they have all these options. When you do this with the Brewers, you look at it and you say, Woodruff, I don't think that they're expecting to get, I don't know if they're expecting 15 outs from him.
Yeah, Brandon Woodruff was a little bit surprised me. But the counter I would say is a lot of these guys are better than we all think they are. Jolys Chacín has been a better pitcher than Jose Quintana and a lot of other guys who are way more.
I don't disagree with that. But
Chase Anderson is actually a very fine pitcher. They acquired.
These
Diego
are number
Gonzalez.
Threes and fours, though.
Well, that's actually the thing. Is technically, again, Chacín has pitched
Chase Anderson is not.
Chase Anderson is.
Chase
not,
Anderson, if you are being charitable,
but we have seen if
Chase Anderson has a 5.22 FIP. Now again, his ERA is better than that, but Chase Anderson is not a guy, that is a guy who if you are throwing as a starter in a playoff series and you are matching up, again, when we talk about this, if he's on the mound, and again, in this series, if he's on the mound and he's facing Kyle Freeland or he's facing Sensatel, take your pick, you're going, okay, advantage Rockies. And that's my point for this is that where the Brewers are going to lean hard and heavy on maybe the best bullpen in this, in the NL.
Agreed. I think part of what they're also going to be banking on here, Gio Gonzalez, who is currently not slated in the starting rotation because they've only named their games 1 and 2 starters. Since acquiring him, he had a rough season at the end with the Nationals, 3-0 with a 2.13 ERA and 5 starts. If that's the Gio Gonzalez they get, then they have the starter.
He is the upside guy. He is the guy who you say, if you said, go back a few years ago and it was like Edison Volquez, where you're like, look, over the totality of Edison Volquez's career, you're not real confident when he steps on the mound in a playoff game. But you also, in the back of your head, know, Edison Volquez could go out here and shove for 7.
As we've talked about, Edison Volquez, and this is me years covering him, he's one of those guys that just watch the first 10 pitches of the game, and you know which Edinson Volquez is getting.
Because if you get the good one,
it's really
he can
good.
Shove. But it also could be, wow, we gave up 5 runs, and we got him out of there in the first.
And it took an hour to get through the first inning. No, so there's no question.
But Gio, I do agree with you, like, that he is the guy. Again, I do look at it at this point, and part of it comes back to, I do think you have to miss bats, especially, and everyone misses bats now.
Both in Miller Park and Coors Field.
Especially in a series where it's in Miller Park and Coors Field, and especially, now again, the Brewers can go more defense, they can go more offense, but they put lineups out there where they're counting on you missing bats, and they're counting on them scoring runs.
So now the real question, who you got in the series?
I because of that, I probably do say Rockies. You know, again, like, I don't, I but, I mean, it's close. I mean, both of these series are really close, but I do think, I mean, the Brewers have been, they could have been in the Rocky situation, but instead they're the number one seed, you know, that, like, it's crazy, but I do look at it and I say, I don't know, you know, again, you know what, I'm going to say Brewers for the DS, and I think their bullpen will start to run out of gas a little bit in the NLCS. What about you?
This is a tough one. I think people who just say, "Oh, Brewers top seed," I think they're
missing.
I'm inclined to lean Brewers just because I respect what they did over the course of the year. I think home field's huge. Miller Park is going to be rocking. I like the fact that, you know, their starting pitching staff is fine, and then that bullpen is lights out. We've also talked a lot about the Rockies.
I would imagine we're going to see Hader for multiple innings on multiple occasions.
Now that Corey Knebel is right, that makes so much of a difference. Having good Corey Knebel helps lengthen that game, you know, shorten the game for the starters even more, because you can really truly finish Knebel, Jeffress, Hader, goodbye. I also think that at the end of the day, their offense is just more reliable. We've seen that. The Rockies scored 2 runs in that one game tiebreaker, 2 runs in 13 innings at Wrigley. It's not a good offense, particularly when you take it on the road. I just think against the quality of the Brewers' staff in total, especially the bullpen, I do expect the Brewers to come out on top.
So we'll move on then to, we have our
this
second
This is the
series.
Fun one. To me, this is the real dandy right here. You have two teams, by the way, shout out, the last two teams to be Baseball America's number one overall farm system, Braves 2017-2018, Dodgers 2016. I think this is fun because the Dodgers, while they do have some of these young standouts, they're the old guard in a way.
Actually, Dodgers were 15-1 because the Braves went back-to-back, I think. Right. Number one order.
Right, Braves were 17-18.
Yeah, 17-18, yes.
The Dodgers, even though they have plenty of young guys, are kind of the old guard of this series.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They went to Game 7 of the World Series last year.
And six-time division champs, the Braves, the ascendant young guys. This matchup fascinates me on a number of levels. You have a couple, you know, two Game 1 stars in Hyunjin Ryu and Mike Fultonewicz, who at the beginning of the year, at no point did you say, oh, yeah, these guys are going to be starting Game 1.
I don't disagree with you, but, Hyunjin Ryu, I mean, I go back to, you know, him basically leading them to Olympic glory. Like, you know, there is a there's a soft spot I always have for the Korean David Wells.
And, hey, I saw him, take a perfect game into the seventh at Dodger Stadium a few years ago. He's a good pitcher. He's been great since coming back this year. But overall, how do you kind of stack up the series? Because you've got two offenses that can crush you at any time. You've got, you know, pitching staffs that are kind of a mix
of starting pitching staff. But the bullpens, I think these are the two shakiest bullpens.
Bingo.
Like, and I do not, I do think that this series will come down to which team can survive their bullpen. Because I feel like that these are the two bullpens where, like, that Rockies-Brewers series, if the Brewers are up and it's the sixth or seventh inning, I kind of feel like, okay, they can feel very confident they have that game. In this series, if it's 5-3, for either of these teams, and you say, okay, it's the seventh inning, you feel like you've got a chance because the Braves walk way too many guys, and they do not have really, I can't really map out a very obvious, here's their, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth strategy, because they have some young guys who seem like they've worn down a little bit, understandably, because they've been in larger roles this year. They have some older guys who are okay, but not so great. And then you look on the Dodgers side, and Kenley Jansen is no longer, you know, a guy I mean, at his peak, and he's understandably paid a little price for this, which is that they've been in the playoffs a lot, and in the playoffs, Kenley Jansen is a guy who they've looked at and said, we can get six outs from him if we need to. I don't feel like he's that guy as much anymore.
He's not, and I mean, it's one of those things, you know, when you're used to watching, you know, old Kenley Jansen, 96-mile-an-hour cutters with just ridiculous movement. Well, that cutter's now 93 with less movement, and he's not locating as well. It's like, okay, it's slower, it's moving less, it's not being located as well. You're going to have problems. He'd had that really, really, really bad stretch in August. But the thing is, he'd actually been better since then, and that's in part why the wild card meltdown was a little bit, you know, I would say very, very concerning. That August meltdown happened. Then went out and gave up two runs in his next 12 and the third innings. He'd been really good throughout September. And then he goes up and gives out those two home runs. I think for me right now, what will be one of the interesting keys to the series is if we see the Dodgers do what the Astros did last year, where the Astros as well had serious bullpen issues. Mm-hmm. And they fixed it by saying, okay, Charlie Morton, Lance McCullers, Colin McHugh, Brad Peacock, all these guys who were starters at some point.
Which the Dodgers have options to do that.
And that's what I think they're going to have to, with the Ross Striplings. They've already moved Alex Wood to the bullpen. We'll see what they choose to do as far as Julio Urias on a DS roster. He was good when he came back, but he only pitched once every 6 or 7 days.
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't think you can put him on a roster like this because I don't think you can use him enough.
And I think that's completely reasonable. But the overall sense of taking guys who are traditional starters and letting them go in three-inning chunks, that to me is, I don't want to say it's going to be what they're going to have to do, because, look, if Caleb Ferguson, Scott Alexander, you know, pitch great, and Kenta Maeda, we've seen what he can do out of the bullpen. You know, if Kenley can get back to what he was in early September, like, there's still usable pieces there. It's not like there's nothing. But I think for me, that's going to be one of the decisive factors, in all likelihood, beyond just this series, but the Dodgers' postseason lives, is how they're able to manipulate those starters in the bullpen if they do it effectively.
But the other interesting thing about that is this. I feel like with the Braves, they are the team in this that is more likely to let guys go a little deeper because they may say we would rather see Mike Foltynewicz face guys a third time than to go to our pen early. I don't know if the Dodgers are, you know, can do that, because I don't know if you're comfortable that Hun Jun Yu can go seven innings. Clayton Kershaw, it is great that he is back, but he's not fully the Clayton Kershaw that, you know, again, has carried them through the playoffs as much. He's had some injuries this year. Again, I do expect he's not getting a hook in the fifth. But you're not expecting, you know, and a complete game from Clayton Kershaw tonight. No. But I think, though, that what they do have, like you said, they have so many guys who can start and can move to the pen. I do think that a lot of those guys are going to be better relievers for them than much of their bullpen. And when we say much of their bullpen, they use 30 different pitchers this year. I'm not counting like, you know, Enrique Hernandez, you know, throwing for them. I'm talking 30 different pitchers. So, you know, they've used a lot of different guys. I do think, though, yeah, I think we've seen what, again, like you said, we've seen what Kenta Maeda can do out of the pen. It's pretty good. I don't think you can use, I mean, like you said, I think you have to use Rich Hill as a starter more likely because Rich Hill can't do that now.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned the players being allowed to face batters a third time, and we talked about it last year at Game 2, and one of the issues I raised was, you have to look at each player as an individual. Rich Hill was better through the order in his third time than was his seconds. It was a mistake for the Dodgers to pull him in Game 2, and it cost them the series. I stand by that. Hunjin Ryu is an interesting case, but we've seen the Dodgers, they map it out. They're very inflexible. They don't adapt. They say, this is what we're doing. They do it without feeling the heartbeat of the game, which I do think is a mistake.
I completely and utterly disagree
and
with
that's
you.
Fine. That's fine. Hunjin Ryu is an interesting guy because it's a smaller sample because he's gone through the third time in the order less than he has the first and the second. But he's actually been pretty good the third time through the order. The slash lines against him are better than the second time.
Survivor bias. Survivor bias on that. Okay, for one, we do know over the totality that there is a third because when you look at mass numbers.
Oh, of course there is. I'm not arguing
that. But beyond
that,
so what it is that on outings where Hun Jun Yu is at his absolute best,
they let him stay.
He lets him stay. Right. If he's not, he doesn't get to. So instead, what you are seeing is you are seeing him at his absolute best. And again, that's not I'm not saying it's not useful in some way, but I am saying like that is a, you know, that's a logic. And again, the reason I say when I say I disagree with you on it is I do think when you say inflexible, again, you do have to adjust depending on the situation. However, it is very easy to get in the heartbeat of the moment, and then all of a sudden you let Matt Harvey pitch longer than he should, and you lose games. Because what you do, the reason you map it out beforehand is that before you let emotion, gut, all that become part of it, you then say, at least I'm going to have something there to remind me that this is probably not a good idea.
And I think it's always good to have the information. It just comes down to, okay, if the guy, and again, I think there's a difference between talking about it in the seventh versus the fourth. There's situationals that you have to take into account. A guy on his 48th pitch and a guy on his 90th pitch. I think there are two completely different situations. But I will say, and I go back to, you know, yes, survivor bias is absolutely a big part of that. At the same time, if Hyunjin Ryu is getting through the third part of the order because he's mowed it down the first two times, holding his velo, you should leave him in.
Right, you should have a guy up in the pen ready to go, but I have no problem with that.
And that's where I want to see if the Dodgers adjust, because last year they didn't take that into consideration at all with Rich Hill, and it was a mistake.
But, well, we're going to have to wrap this up because we do have the other half of the issue to put out today.
Real quick, who you got?
I do think the Braves. I think that this Braves team is here before they should be. You know, like this is a team that was really kind of aimed for, you know, for 19, not 18. But now that they're here, I feel like that this lineup is really good. I don't think, to be honest, I don't think losing Dansby Swanson for the series hurts them that much. It is a nice thing. Now, about
defensively, there is a little there. Right. That does hurt.
Right. But I don't think it's a killer by any stretch of the imagination. And I do think, I just think that, you know, I think that we're going to have some pretty majestic Ronald Acuna moments, which is very fun. Now, again, the thing about the Dodgers, like, hey, I know that they went out and got Manny Machado. It is amazing. It's like, you know, they've basically done this with no Corey Seager for very much of the year. But again, if you go out and get Manny Machado, then we could also, it could be a series where Manny Machado ends up having very many majestic moments. But
I picked the Dodgers before the season to win the World Series. I feel like I have to stick with that. I can't jump off the ship as long as they're still in it, especially because they've been playing well here toward the end. So by that, I do by default pick the Dodgers, but in no way, shape, or form will I be shocked, or should anybody be shocked, if the Braves win, or even if they win big.
These are close to toss-ups. I mean, I would say on both situations. Like, we are talking about two series where, again, you get to the playoffs, anything can happen, obviously, anyway, but these are very close series.
Agreed. I don't think there's any one team that you can say, oh, they should blow the other one out of the water. These are going to be great series. Well, we'll be back tomorrow to talk about the American League division series.
I have to work from home tomorrow, or we'll pull someone else in.
We'll figure it out. For JJ Cooper, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening, everybody.